Lissa, didn't you? Who were you going for? Me or her? He studied me for several long seconds. He could have lied. He could have given the easy answer by saying he'd intended to push both of us out of the way. If that was even possible, which I didn't recall. But Dimitri didn't lie.
I don't know, Rosa. I don't know.
I sighed. This isn't going to be easy.
It never is,
he said, pulling me into his arms. I leaned against his chest and closed my eyes. No, it wouldn't be easy, but it would be worth it. As long as we were together, it would be worth it. We sat like that for a long time, until a discreet knock at the half-open door broke us apart. Lissa stood in the doorway. Sorry, she said, her face shining with joy when she saw me. Should have put a sock on the door. Didn't realize things were getting hot and heavy. No avoiding it, I said lightly, clasping Dimitri's hands. Things are always hot with him around. Dimitri looked scandalized. He'd never held back when we were in bed together, but his private nature wouldn't let him even hint about such matters to others. It was mean, but I laughed and kissed his cheek. Oh, this is going to be fun, I said, now that everything's out in the open.
Yeah,
he said.
I got a pretty fun look from your father the other day.
He gave Lissa a quick, knowing glance and then stood up. Leaning down, he kissed the top of my head.
I should go and let you two talk.
Will you be back? I asked as he moved to the door. He paused and smiled at me, and those dark eyes answered my questions and so much more.
Of course.
Lissa took his spot, sitting on the bed's edge. She hugged me gingerly, no doubt worried about my injuries. She then scolded me for sitting up, but I didn't care. Happiness surged through me. I was so glad she was okay, so relieved, and I had no idea how she felt. The bond was gone. And not like during the jail escape, when she'd put the wall up. There was simply nothing there between us. I was with myself, completely and utterly alone, just as I had been years ago. My eyes widened, and she laughed. I wondered when you'd notice, she said. How is this possible? I was frozen and numb. The bond was gone. I felt like my arm had been amputated. And how do you know? She frowned. Part of it's instinct, but Adrian saw it, that our auras aren't connected anymore. But how? How could that happen? I sounded crazy and desperate. The bond couldn't be gone. It couldn't. I'm not entirely sure, she admitted, her frown deepening. I talked about it a lot with Sonia and, Adrian. We think when I brought you back the first time, it was spirit alone that held you back from the land of the dead and that kept you tied to me. This time, you nearly died again. Or maybe you did for a moment. Only you and your body fought your way back. It was you who got out, with no help from spirit. And once that happened, she shrugged. Like I said, we're only guessing. But Sonia thinks once your own strength broke you away, you didn't need any help being pulled back from death. You did it on your own. And when you freed yourself of spirit, you freed yourself from me. You didn't need a bond to keep you with the living. It was crazy. Impossible. But if you're saying I escaped the land of the dead, I'm not like immortal or anything, am I? Lissa laughed again. No, we're certain of that. Sonia explained it, saying anything alive can die. And as long as you've got an aura, you're alive. Strigoi are immortal, but not alive. So they don't have auras, and...
The world spun.
I'll take your word for it. I think maybe I do need to lie down.
That's probably a good idea.
I gently eased myself onto my back, desperately needing distraction from what I'd just learned, because it was still too surreal, still impossible to process. I eyed my surroundings. The lush room was bigger than I'd previously realized. It kept going and going, branching into other rooms. It was a suite. Maybe an apartment. I could just make out a living room with leather furniture and a flat-screen TV. Where are we?
In palace housing, she replied.
Palace housing? How'd we end up here? How do you think? She asked dryly. I couldn't work my mouth for a moment. I needed no bond to realize what had happened. Another impossibility had occurred while I'd been out of it. Crap. They had the election, didn't they? They elected you queen, once Jill was there to stand in for your family. She shook her head and almost laughed. My reaction was a little stronger than crap, Rose. Do you have any idea what you've done? She looked anxious, stressed, and totally overwhelmed. I wanted to be serious and comforting for her sake, but I could feel a goofy grin spreading over my face. She groaned. You're happy. Liss, you were meant for this. You're better than any of the other candidates. Rose, she cried. Running for queen was supposed to be a diversion. I'm only 18. So is Alexandra. Lissa shook her head in exasperation. I'm so sick of hearing about her. She lived centuries ago, you know. I think people died when they were 30 back then, so she was practically middle-aged. I caught hold of her hand. You're going to be great. It doesn't matter how old you are. And it's not like you have to call meetings and analyze law books all on your own, you know. I mean, I'm sure not going to do any of that. But there are other smart people. Ariana Zelsky didn't make the last test, but you know she'll help if you ask her to. She's still on the council, and there are others you can rely on. We just have to find them. I believe in you. Lissa sighed and looked down, her hair hanging forward in a curtain. I know. And part of me is excited, like this will restore my family's honor. I think that's what saved me from a total breakdown. I didn't want to be queen, but if I have to, then I'm going to do it right. I feel like I have the world at my fingertips, like I can do so much good, but I'm so afraid of messing up too. She looked up sharply. And I'm not giving up on the rest of my life either. I guess I'm going to be the first queen in college. Cool, I said. You can IM with the council from campus. Maybe you can command people to do your homework. She apparently didn't think the joke was as funny as I did. Going back to my family, Rose, how long did you know about Jill? Damn, I'd known this part of the conversation would eventually be coming. I averted my eyes. Not really that long. We didn't want to stress you until we knew it was real, I added hastily. I can't believe... She shook her head. I just can't believe it. I had to go on her tone, not the bond. It was so strange, like losing one of my key senses, sight, hearing. Are you upset? Of course I am. How can you be surprised? I figured you'd be happy. Happy to find out my dad cheated on my mom? Happy to have a sister I hardly know? I've tried to talk to her, but... Lissa sighed again. It's so weird. Almost weirder than suddenly being queen. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to think of my father. And I sure as hell don't know what to do with her. Love them both, I said softly. They're your family. Jill's great, you know. Get to know her. Be excited. I don't know if I can. I think you're more of a sister to me than she'll ever be.
Lissa stared off at nothing. And of all people, I was convinced for so long that there was something going on between her and Christian. Well, out of all the worries in the world, that's one you can let go because it's not true. But within her comment was something dark and sad. How is Christian? She turned back to me, her eyes full of pain.
He's having a hard time. I am too. He visits her, Tasha. He hates what she did, but, well, she's still his family. It hurts him, but he tries to hide it. You know how he is.
Yeah. Christian had spent a good portion of his life masking dark feelings with snark and sarcasm. He was a pro at fooling others about how he truly felt.
I know he'll be better in time. I just hope I can be there for him enough. So much is happening. College, being queen, and always, always their spirit there, pressing down on me, smothering me.
Alarm shot through me. And panic. Panic over something far worse than not knowing what Lissa was feeling or where she was. Spirit. I was afraid of spirit. And the fact that I couldn't fight it for her. The darkness. I can't absorb it anymore. What will we do? A twisted smile crossed her lips.
You mean, what will I do? It's my problem now, Rose. Like it always should have been.
But no, you can't. St. Vladimir
isn't me. And you can protect me from some things, but not all.
I shook my head.
No, I can't let you face spirit alone. I'm not exactly alone. I talked to Sonya. She's really good at healing charms and thinks there's a way to keep myself in balance.
Oksana said the same thing, I recalled, hardly feeling reassured.
And there's always the antidepressants. I don't like them, but I'm queen now. I have responsibilities. I'll do what I have to. A queen gives up everything, right?
I guess. I couldn't help feeling frightened. Useless.
I'm just so worried about you, and I don't know how to help you anymore. I told you, you don't have to. I'll protect my mind. Your job's to protect my body, right? And Dimitri will be around too. It'll all be okay.
The conversation with Dimitri came back to me.
Who were you going for? Me or her?
I gave her the best smile I could.
Yeah, it'll all be okay.
Her hand squeezed mine.
I'm so glad you're back, Rose. You'll always be part of me, no matter what. And honestly, I'm kind of glad you can't see my sex life anymore.
That makes two of us, I laughed. No bond. No magical attachment. It was going to be so strange. But really, did I need it? In real life, people formed bonds of another nature. Bonds of love and loyalty. We would get through this. I'll always be there for you, you know? Anything you need.
I know, she said. And actually, I need you for something now.
Name it, I said. She did. Chapter 35. I wished Lissa had needed me to go take out an army of Strigoi. I would have felt more comfortable with that than what she needed me to do now. Meet with Jill to discuss the coronation. Lissa wanted me there for support, as a kind of go-between. I wasn't able to walk that well yet, so we waited another day. Lissa seemed glad for the delay. Jill was waiting for us in a small room I'd never expected to see again, the parlor where Tatiana had berated me for moving in on Adrian. It had been a pretty bizarre experience at the time, seeing as Adrian and I hadn't actually been involved back then. Now, after everything that had occurred between him and me, it just felt Strange. Confusing. I still didn't know what had happened to him since Tasha's arrest. Walking in there, I also felt terribly... alone. No, not alone. Uninformed. Vulnerable. Jill sat in a chair, her hands folded in her lap. She stared straight ahead with an unreadable face. Beside me, Lissa's own features were equally blank. She felt... well, that was the thing. I didn't know. I didn't know. I mean, I could tell she was uncomfortable, but there were no thoughts in my head to tip me off. I had no specifics. Again, I reminded myself that the rest of the world worked like this. You functioned alone. You did your best to manage strange situations without the magical insight of another person. I'd never realized how much I'd taken the thoughts of even just one other person for granted. The one thing I felt sure of was that both Lissa and Jill were freaked out by each other, but not by me. That was why I was here. "Hey, Jill," I said, smiling. "How are you?" She snapped out of whatever thoughts had been occupying her and jumped up from the chair. I thought that was strange, but then it made sense. "Lissa, you rose when a queen entered the room."
"It's okay," said Lissa, stumbling over her words a little. "Sit."
She took a seat opposite Jill. It was the biggest chair in the room, the one Tatiana had always sat in. Jill hesitated a moment, then shifted her gaze back to me. I must have provided some encouragement because she returned to her chair. I sat in one beside Lissa, wincing as a small pain tightened in my chest. Worry for me momentarily distracted Jill from Lissa.
"How are you feeling? Are you okay? Should you even be out of bed?"
The cute rambling nature. I was glad to see it again. "Fine," I lied. "Good as new."
"I was worried when I saw what happened. I mean, there was so much blood and so much craziness and no one knew if you'd pull through."
Jill frowned.
"I don't know. It was all so scary. I'm so glad you're okay."
I kept smiling, hoping to reassure her. Silence fell then. The room grew tense. In political situations, Lissa was the expert, always able to smooth everything over with the right words. I was the one who spoke up in uncomfortable scenarios, saying the things that shocked others. The things no one wanted to hear. This situation seemed like one that required her diplomacy. But I knew it was on me to take charge.
"Jill," I said, "we wanted to know if you'd be willing to, well, take part in the coronation ceremony."
Jill's eyes flicked briefly to Lissa, still stone-faced, and then back to me.
"What does take part mean exactly? What would I have to do?"
"Nothing hard," I assured her. "It's just some formalities that are usually done by family members, ceremonial stuff, like you did with the vote." I hadn't witnessed that, but Jill had apparently only had to stand by Lissa's side to show family strength. Such a small thing for a law to hinge on.
"Mostly it's about being on display and putting on a good face."
"Well," mused Jill, "I've been doing that for most of this week."
"I've been doing it for most of my life," said Lissa.
Jill looked startled. Again, I felt at a loss without the bond. Lissa's tone hadn't made her meaning clear. Was it a challenge to Jill? That the girl hadn't faced nearly what Lissa had? Or was it supposed to be sympathy for Jill's lack of experience?
You'll get used to it," I said.
"Over time." Jill shook her head, a small and bitter smile on her face.
"I don't know about that."
I didn't either. I wasn't sure how one handled the kind of situation she'd been dropped into. My mind rapidly ran through a list of more meaningless kind things I could say, but Lissa finally took over.
"I know how weird this is," she said.
She determinedly met Jill's green eyes. The only feature the sisters shared, I decided. Jill had the makings of a future Emily. Lissa carried a mix of her parents' traits.
This is weird for me, too. I don't know what to do.
What do you want? Asked Jill quietly. I heard the real question. Jill wanted to know if Lissa wanted her. Lissa had been devastated by the death of her brother, but a surprise illegitimate sibling was no substitute for Andre. I tried to imagine what it would be like to be in either girl's place. I tried and failed.
I don't know, admitted Lissa. I don't know what I want.
Jill nodded, dropping her gaze, but not before I caught sight of the emotion playing across her face. Disappointment. Yet Lissa's answer hadn't entirely been unexpected. Jill asked the next best thing.
Do you want me to be in the ceremonies?
The question hung in the air. It was a good one. It was the reason we'd come here. But did Lissa actually want this? Studying her, I still wasn't sure. I didn't know if she was just following protocol, trying to get Jill to play a role expected among royalty. In this case, there was no law that said Jill had to do anything. She simply had to exist.
Yes,
said Lissa at last. I heard the truth in her words, and something inside of me lightened. Lissa didn't just want Jill for the sake of image. A part of Lissa wanted Jill in her life, but managing that would be difficult. Still, it was a start, and Jill seemed to recognize that.
Okay, she said. Just tell me what I need to do.
It occurred to me that Jill's youth and nervousness were deceptive. There were sparks of bravery and boldness within her. Sparks that I felt certain would grow. She really was a Dragomir. Lissa looked relieved, but I think it was because she'd made a tiny step of progress with her sister. It had nothing to do with the coronation.
Someone else will explain it all. I'm not really sure what you do, to be honest. But Rose is right, it won't be hard.
Jill simply nodded.
Thank you,
said Lissa. She stood up and both Jill and I rose with her.
I really appreciate it.
That awkwardness returned as the three of us stood there. It would have been a good moment for the sisters to hug, but even though both seemed pleased at their progress, neither was ready for that. When Lissa looked at Jill, she still saw her father with another woman. When Jill looked at Lissa, she saw her life completely turned upside down. A life once shy and private now out there for the world to gawk at. I couldn't change her fate, but hugging I could do. Heedless of my stitches, I put my arms around the young girl.
Thanks, I said, echoing Lissa. This'll all be okay. You'll see.
Jill nodded yet again, and with no more to discuss, Lissa and I moved toward the door. Jill's voice brought us to a halt.
Hey, what happens after the coronation? To me. To us.
I glanced at Lissa. Another good question. Lissa turned toward Jill but still wasn't making direct eye contact.
We'll get to know each other. Things will get better.
The smile that appeared on Jill's face was genuine. Small. But genuine.
Okay,
she said. There was hope in that smile, too. Hope and relief.
I'd like that.
As for me, I had to hide a frown. I apparently could function without the bond because I could tell, with absolute confidence, that Lissa wasn't exactly giving the whole truth. What wasn't she telling Jill? Lissa did want things to be better, I was certain. Even if she wasn't sure how. But there was something small that Lissa wasn't revealing to either of us. Something that made me think Lissa didn't actually believe things would improve. Out of nowhere, a strange echo from Victor Dashkov rang through my mind about Jill. If she has any sense, Vasilisa will send her away. I didn't know why I remembered that, but it sent a chill through me. The sisters were both mustering smiles, and I hastily did as well, not wanting either to know my concerns. Lissa and I left after that, heading back toward my room. My little outing had been more tiring than I expected, and as much as I hated to admit it, I couldn't wait to lie down again. When we reached my room, I still hadn't decided if I should ask Lissa about Jill or wait to get Dimitri's opinion. The decision was taken for me when we found an unexpected visitor waiting. Adrian. He sat on my bed, head tipped back as though he was completely consumed by studying the ceiling. I knew better. He'd known the instant we approached, or at least when Lissa approached. We stopped in the doorway, and he finally turned toward us. He looked like he hadn't slept in a while. Dark shadows hung under his eyes, and his cute face was hardened with lines of fatigue. Whether it was mental or physical fatigue, I couldn't say. Nonetheless, his lazy smile was the same as ever.
"Your Majesty," he said grandly.
"Stop," scoffed Lissa. "You should know better."
"I've never known better," he countered. "You should know that."
I saw Lissa start to smile, then she glanced at me and grew serious, realizing this was hardly let's have fun with Adrian time.
"Well,"
she said uneasily, not looking very queenly at all.
"I've got some things to do."
She was going to bolt, I realized. I'd gone with her for her family chat, but she was going to abandon me now. Just as well, though. This conversation with Adrian had been inevitable, and I'd brought it on myself. I had to finish this on my own, just as I told Dimitri.
"I'm sure you do," I said.
Her face turned hesitant, as though she was suddenly reconsidering. She felt guilty. She was worried about me and wanted to stand by me. I lightly touched her arm. "It's okay, Liz. I'll be okay. Go." She squeezed my hand in return, her eyes wishing me good luck. She told Adrian goodbye and left, closing the door behind her. It was just him and me now. He stayed on my bed, watching me carefully. He still wore the smile he'd given Lissa, like this was no big deal. I knew otherwise and made no attempts to hide my feelings. Standing still made me tired, so I sat down in a nearby chair, nervously wondering what to say.
"Adrian..."
"Let's start with this, little Dampier," he said cordially. "Was it going on before you left court?"
It took me a moment to follow that abrupt Adrian conversation format. He was asking if Dimitri and I had gotten back together before my arrest. I shook my head slowly.
"No. I was with you. Just you."
True, I'd been a mess of emotions, but my intentions had been firm.
"Well, that's something," he said.
Some of his pleasantness was starting to slip. I smelled it then, ever so faintly. Alcohol and smoke.
"Better some rekindling of sparks in the heat of battle or quest than you cheating right in front of me."
I shook my head more urgently now. "No, I swear, I didn't. Nothing happened then. Not until..." I hesitated on how to phrase my next words.
"Later,"
he guessed.
"Which makes it okay?"
"No, of course not. I..." Damn it. I'd screwed up. Just because I hadn't cheated on Adrian at court didn't mean that I hadn't cheated on him later.
You could phrase it however you wanted, but let's face it. Sleeping with another guy in a hotel room was pretty much cheating if you had a boyfriend. It didn't matter if that guy was the love of your life or not.
"I'm sorry," I said. It was the simplest and most appropriate thing I could say. "I'm sorry. What I did was wrong. I didn't mean for it to happen. I really thought he and I were done. I was with you. I wanted to be with you. And then I realized that...
No, no, stop.
Adrian held up a hand, his voice tight now as his cool facade continued to crumble.
I really do not want to hear about the great revelation you had about how you guys were always meant to be together, whatever it was.
I stayed silent because, well, that kind of had been my revelation. Adrian ran a hand through his hair.
Really, it's my fault. It was there. 100 times there. How often did I see it? I knew. It kept happening. Over and over. You'd say you were through with him. And over, I'd believe it. No matter what my eyes showed me. No matter what my heart told me. My fault.
It was that slightly unhinged rambling. Not that nervous kind of Jill's, but the unstable kind that worried me about how close he was getting to the edge of insanity. An edge I might very well be pushing him toward. I wanted to go over to him, but had the sense to stay seated. Adrian,
I loved you!
He yelled. He jumped up out of his chair so quickly I never saw it coming.
I loved you, and you destroyed me! You took my heart and ripped it up! You might as well have staked me!
The change in his features also caught me by surprise. His voice filled the room. So much grief, so much anger. So unlike the usual Adrian. He strode toward me, hand clasped over his chest.
I loved you. And you used me the whole time.
No! No, it's not true! I wasn't afraid of Adrian, but in the face of that emotion, I found myself cringing.
I wasn't using you! I loved you! I still do, but...
He looked disgusted.
Rose, come on!
I mean it! I do love you!
Now I stood up, pain or no, trying to look him in the eye.
I always will.
But we're not... I don't think we work as a couple.
That's a bullshit breakup line, and you know it.
He was kind of right, but I thought back to moments with Dimitri. How well we worked in sync. How he always seemed to get exactly what I felt. I meant what I'd said. I did love Adrian. He was wonderful in spite of all his flaws. Because really, who didn't have flaws? He and I had fun together. There was affection, but we weren't matched in the way Dimitri and I were. I'm not the one for you, I said weakly.
Because you're with another guy?
No, Adrian. Because I don't know, I was fumbling badly. I didn't know how to explain what I felt, how you could care about someone and love hanging out with them, but still not work as a couple. I don't balance you like you need.
What the hell does that mean?
He exclaimed. My heart ached for him, and I was so sorry for what I'd done. But this was the truth of it all. The fact that you have to ask says it all. When you find that person, you'll know. I didn't add that with his history, he'd probably have a number of false starts before finding that person. And I know this sounds like another bullshit breakup line, but I really would like to be your friend. He stared at me for several heavy seconds and then laughed, though there wasn't much humor in it.
You know what's great? You're serious. Look at your face.
He gestured as though I actually could examine myself.
You really think it's that easy? That I can sit here and watch your happy ending. That I can watch you getting everything you want as you lead your charmed life. Charmed?
The guilt and sympathy warring within me got a little kick of anger.
Hardly. Do you know what I've gone through in the last year?
I'd watched Mason die, fought in the St. Vladimir's attack, been captured by Strigoi in Russia, and then lived on the run as a wanted murderess.
That didn't sound charmed at all.
And yet, here you are, triumphant after it all. You survived death and freed yourself from the bond. This is Queen. You got the guy and you're happily ever after.
I turned my back to him and stalked away. Adrian, what do you want me to say? I can apologize forever, but there's nothing else I can do here. I never wanted to hurt you. I can't say that enough, but the rest? Do you really expect me to be sad about everything else having worked out? Should I wish I was still accused of murder?
No, he said. I don't want you to suffer much. But the next time you're in bed with Belikov or whatever, stop a moment and remember that not everyone made out as well as you did.
I turned back to face him. Adrian, I never...
Not just me, little Dampier,
he added quietly.
There's been a lot of collateral damage along the way while you battled against the world. I was a victim, obviously. But what about Jill? What happens to her now that you've abandoned her to the royal wolves? And Eddie? Have you thought about him? And where's your alchemist?
Every word he slung at me now was an arrow, piercing my heart more than the bullets had. The fact that he'd referred to Jill by her name instead of Jailbait carried an extra hurt. I was already toting plenty of guilt about her, but the others? Well, they were a mystery. I'd heard rumors about Eddie but hadn't seen him since my return. He was clear of James's death, but killing a Maroi, when others still thought he might have been brought in alive, carried a heavy stigma. Eddie's previous insubordination, thanks to me, also damned him, even if it had all been for the greater good. As queen, Lyssa could only do so much. The guardians served the Maroi, but it was customary for the Maroi to step back and let the guardians manage their own people. Eddie wasn't being dismissed or imprisoned. But what assignment would they give him? Hard to say. Sydney, she was an even greater mystery. Where's your alchemist? The goings-on of that group were beyond me, beyond my world. I remembered her face that last time I'd seen her, back in the hotel, strong but sad. I knew she and the other alchemists had been released since then, but her expression had said she wasn't out of trouble yet. And Victor Dashkov? Where did he fit in? I wasn't sure. Evil or not, he was still someone who'd suffered as a result of my actions, and the events surrounding his death would stay with me forever. Collateral damage. I'd brought down a lot of people with me, intentionally or no, but as Adrian's words continued sinking into me, one of them suddenly gave me pause. Victim, I said slowly. That's the difference between you and me.
Huh?
He'd been watching me closely while I'd considered the fates of my friends and was caught off guard now.
What are you talking about?
You said you were a victim. That's why ultimately you and I aren't matched for each other. In spite of everything that's happened, I've never thought of myself that way. Being a victim means you're powerless, that you won't take action. Always I've done something to fight for myself, for others, no matter what. I'd never seen such outrage on Adrian's face.
That's what you think of me? That I'm lazy, powerless?
Not exactly, but I had a feeling that after this conversation, he would run off to the comfort of his cigarettes and alcohol and maybe whatever female company he could find. No, I said. I think you're amazing. I think you're strong. But I don't think you've realized it yet, or learned how to use any of that. And I wanted to add I wasn't the person who could inspire that in him.
This, he said, moving toward the door, was the last thing I expected. You destroy my life, and then feed me inspirational philosophy.
I felt horrible. And it was one of those moments where I wished my mouth wouldn't just blurt out the first thing on my mind.
I'd learned a lot of control, but not quite enough.
I'm just telling you the truth. You're better than this, better than whatever it is you're going to do now.
Adrian rested his hand on the doorknob and gave me a rueful look.
Rose, I'm an addict with no work ethic who's likely going to go insane. I'm not like you. I'm not a superhero.
Not yet, I said. He scoffed, shook his head, and opened the door. Just before leaving, he gave me one more backward glance.
The contract's null and void, by the way.
I felt like I'd been slapped in the face. And in one of those rare moments, Rose Hathaway was rendered speechless. I had no witty quips, no elaborate explanations, and no profound insight. Adrian left, and I wondered if I'd ever see him again.
Chapter 36.
I'd often dreamed about waking up with Dimitri. Waking up in a way that was ordinary. Sweet. Not because we were hastily trying to catch sleep before fighting our next foe. Not because we were recovering from sex we had to hide. Sex laden with baggage and myriad complications. I just wanted to wake up together, in his arms, and have it be a good morning. Today was that day. How long have you been awake? I asked drowsily. My head was on his chest, and I was wrapped against him as best as I could manage. My wounds were healing rapidly, but still had to be babied. We'd found a few creative workarounds last night. Sunlight now spilled in through the windows, filling my bedroom with gold. He was watching me in that quiet, solemn way of his, with those dark eyes that were so easy to get lost in.
A little while, he admitted, lifting his gaze to the sunlight-filled window. I think I'm still on a human schedule. Either that, or my body just wants to be up when the sun is. Seeing it is still amazing to me.
I stifled a yawn.
You should have gotten up.
I didn't want to disturb you.
I ran my fingers over his chest, sighing in contentment. This is perfection, I said. Is every day going to be like this? Dimitri rested his hand on my cheek and then moved down, tipping my chin up.
Not every day, but most days.
Our lips met, and the warmth and light in the room paled compared to what burned inside me. I was wrong, I murmured when we finally broke the long, languid kiss. This is perfection. He smiled, something he was doing an awful lot of lately. I loved it. Things would probably change once we were back out in the world. Even if we were together now, Dimitri's guardian side would always be there, ready and watchful. But not right now. Not in this moment.
What's the matter?
He asked me. With a start, I realized I'd begun to frown. I tried to relax my face. Unbidden, Adrian's words had come back to me, that the next time I was in bed with Dimitri, I should think about others who weren't so lucky.
Do you think I ruin lives?
I asked.
What? Of course not.
The smile changed to shock.
Where would you get that idea?
I shrugged. There are just a lot of people whose lives are still kind of a mess. My friends, I mean.
True, he said. And let me guess, you want to fix everyone's problems?
I didn't answer. Dimitri kissed me again.
Rosa, he said. It's normal to want to help the people you love, but you can't fix everything.
It's what I do, I countered, feeling a little petulant. I protect people.
I know, and that's one of the reasons I love you. But for now, you only have to worry about protecting one person. Lisa.
I stretched out against him,
noticing my injuries really were constantly improving.
My body would be able to do all sorts of things soon.
I suppose that means we can't stay in bed all day?
I asked hopefully.
Afraid not,
he said, lightly running his fingertips along the curve of my hip. He never seemed to get tired of studying my body.
They come first.
I brought my mouth back toward his. But not for a little while.
No,
he agreed. His hand slid up to the back of my neck, tangling in my hair as he drew me closer.
Not for a little while.
I had never attended a royal coronation before, and honestly, I hoped I never would again. I only wanted there to be this one queen ruling in my lifetime. Eerily, the coronation was kind of a reverse of Tatiana's funeral. What was the old saying? The queen is dead. Long live the queen. Custom dictated the monarch-to-be spend the first part of the coronation day at the church, presumably to pray for guidance, strength, and all that spiritual stuff. I wasn't sure what custom did in the case of atheist monarchs. Probably they faked it. With Lyssa, who was fairly devout, I knew that wasn't a problem and that she was probably legitimately praying she'd do a good job as queen. After the vigil, Lyssa and a huge procession walked back across court to the palace building where the crowning took place. Representatives from all the royal families joined her, along with musicians who were playing much more cheerful tunes than for Tatiana's procession. Lyssa's guardians, she had a fleet now, walked with her. I was among them, wearing my finest black and white, including the red collar marking me as a royal guardian. Here, at least, was a notable difference from the funeral. Tatiana had been dead. Her guardians were for show. Lyssa was very much alive. And even if she'd won the council's vote, she still had enemies. My colleagues and I were on high alert. Not that you'd think we'd needed it. Not with the way the onlookers cheered. All those who had camped out during the trials and election had stayed for this fanfare, and more had shown up still. I wasn't sure when there'd ever been this many Moroi in one place. After the long and winding walk, Lyssa made it to the palace building and then waited in a small antechamber adjacent to what served as the Moroi throne room. The throne room was almost never used for modern business, but every once in a while, like a new queen being sworn in, the Moroi liked to pull out ancient traditions. The room was small and couldn't hold all the witnesses from outside. It couldn't even hold the entire procession. But the council and highest-ranking royal members were there, along with some select invitees of Lyssa's. I stood off to the side, watching the glamour unfold. Lyssa hadn't made her grand entrance yet, so there was a low hum of conversation. The room was all green and gold, having been given a thorough and fast remodel in the last few days, since custom dictated the ruling family's colors dominate the throne room. The throne itself sat high against the far wall, accessible by steps. Carved of wood I could no longer identify, I knew the throne had been carried around the world by Moroi monarchs for centuries. People were lining up in carefully assigned positions, preparing for when Lyssa would enter last. I was studying one of the new chandeliers, admiring how realistic the candles in it looked. I knew they were electric, but the craftsmen had done amazing work. Technology masked in old-world glory, just as the Moroi liked. A small nudge drew my attention away. "Well, well, well," I said. "If it isn't the people responsible for unleashing Rose Hathaway on the world, you've got a lot to answer for." My parents stood before me in their typical and wildly contrasting clothing. My mom wore the same guardian outfit I did, a white shirt with black slacks and jacket. Abe was, well, Abe. He had on a black pinstripe suit with a black dress shirt underneath. Splashed against the darkness was a bright lemon-yellow paisley tie. A matching handkerchief peeped out of one of the jacket's pockets, along with his gold earrings and chains. He also wore a black fedora,
which was a new addition to his outlandish wardrobe. I guess he wanted to go all out for an event like this, and at least it wasn't a pirate hat.
"Don't blame us," said my mother. "We didn't blow up half of court, steal a dozen cars, call out a murderer in the middle of a crowd, or get our teenage friend crowned queen."
"Actually," said Abe, "I did blow up half of court."
My mom ignored him, her expression softening as she studied me with her guardian eyes.
"Seriously, how are you feeling?"
I'd seen them only briefly in the days since waking up, just enough for us all to check in on each other.
"You're doing an awful lot of standing today, and I've already told Hans not to put you on active duty for a while."
It was one of the most motherly things I'd ever heard her say.
I'm fine. A lot better. I could go on active duty right now."
"You will do no such thing,"
she said in exactly the tone she'd use giving orders to a troop of guardians.
"Stop coddling her, Janine."
"I'm not coddling her. I'm looking out for her. You're spoiling her."
I looked back and forth at them in amazement. I didn't know if I was witnessing a fight or foreplay. I wasn't thrilled about either option.
"Okay, okay, just back off, you guys. I survived, right? That's what counts."
"It is," said Abe.
He suddenly seemed very fatherly, which weirded me out even more than my mom's behavior.
"And despite the property damage and string of broken laws left in your wake, I'm proud of you."
I suspected that secretly he was proud of me because of those things. My cynical interior commentary was brought to a halt when my mom concurred.
"I'm proud, too. Your methods were not ideal, but you did a great thing. Great things, really. Finding both the murderer and Jill."
I noticed her careful wording of "the murderer." I think it was still hard for all of us to accept the truth about Tasha.
"A lot will change because of Jill."
All of us looked over at the foot of the throne. Ekaterina stood on one side, ready with the Book of Royal Vows. The other side was where members of the monarch's family stood, but only one lone person was there. Jill. Someone had done a great job of cleaning her up. Her curly hair had been elaborately styled and pinned, and she wore a knee-length sheath dress with a wide portrait-style collar, just barely showing off her shoulders. The dress's cut made the most of her lanky figure, and the dark green satin looked great with her features. She was standing straight, chin high, but there was anxiety all over her, made more obvious by her being so conspicuously alone. I glanced back at Abe, who met my eyes expectantly. I had a lot of questions for him, and he was one of the few who might tell me the truth. The decision was, which question to ask? It was like having a genie. I'd only get so many wishes.
"What will happen to Jill?"
I asked at last.
"Will she just go back to school? Are they going to train her to be a princess?"
Lyssa couldn't be both princess and queen, so her old title went to the next oldest member of her family. Abe didn't answer for several moments.
"Until Lyssa can get the law changed, and hopefully she will. Jill is all that allows her to keep her throne. If something happens to Jill, Lyssa will no longer be queen. So, what would you do?"
"I'd keep her safe."
"Then you have your answer."
"It's kind of a broad one," I said. "Safe means a lot of things."
"Ibrahim," warned my mother. "Enough, this isn't the time or place."
Abe held my gaze a bit longer and then broke into an easy smile.
of course, this is a family gathering, a celebration. And look, here's our newest member."
Dimitri had joined us and wore black and white like my mother and me. He stood beside me conspicuously, not touching.
"Mr. Mazur,"
he said formally, nodding a greeting to both of them.
Guardian Hathaway?
Dimitri was 7 years older than me. But right then, facing my parents, he looked like he was 16 and about to pick me up for a date.
Ah, Belikov,
said Abe, shaking Dimitri's hand.
I'd been hoping we'd run into each other. I'd really like to get to know you better. Maybe we can set aside some time to talk, learn more about life, love, etc. Do you like to hunt? You seem like a hunting man. That's what we should do sometime. I know a great spot in the woods, far, far away. We could make a day of it. I've certainly got a lot of questions I'd like to ask you. A lot of things I'd like to tell you, too.
I shot a panicked look at my mother, silently begging her to stop this. Abe had spent a good deal of time talking to Adrian when we dated, explaining in vivid and gruesome detail exactly how Abe expected his daughter to be treated. I did not want Abe taking Dimitri off alone into the wilderness, especially if firearms were involved.
Actually, said my mom casually, I'd like to come along. I also have a number of questions, especially about when you two were back at St. Vladimir's.
Don't you guys have somewhere to be? I asked hastily. We're about to start. That, at least, was true. Nearly everyone was in formation, and the crowd was quieting.
Of course,
said Abe. To my astonishment, he brushed a kiss over my forehead before stepping away.
I'm glad you're back.
Then, with a wink, he said to Dimitri,
looking forward to our chat.
Run, I said when they were gone. If you slip out now, maybe they won't notice. Go back to Siberia.
Actually, said Dimitri, I'm pretty sure Abe would notice. Don't worry, Rosa. I'm not afraid. I'll take whatever heat they give me over being with you. It's worth it.
You really are the bravest man I know, I told him. He smiled, his eyes falling on a small commotion at the room's entrance.
Looks like she's ready,
he murmured. I hope I am, I whispered back. In true grandiose fashion, a herald brought the room to attention. Perfect silence fell. You couldn't even hear breathing. The herald stepped back from the door.
Princess Vasilisa Sabina Rhea Dragomir.
Lyssa entered, and even though I'd seen her less than half an hour ago, I still caught my breath. She was wearing a formal gown but had once again dodged sleeves. No doubt the dressmaker had had a fit. The dress was floor-length, with a skirt of silk and chiffon layers that moved and fluttered around Lyssa as she strode forward. The fabric was the same jade as her eyes, as was the dress's top, with the halter collar covered in emeralds that gave the illusion of a necklace. Matching emeralds covered the dress's belt, and bracelets completed the display. Her hair was worn long, brushed out to gleaming platinum perfection, an aura unto itself. Christian walked beside her, a sharp contrast with his black hair and dark suit. Customs were being modified significantly today since a family member normally would have escorted Lyssa. But, well, she was kind of running out. Even I had to admit he looked amazing, and his pride and love for her shone on his face, no matter what troubled feeling stirred within him over Tasha. Lord Ozera, I remembered. I had a feeling that title would become more and more important now. He led Lyssa to the base of the throne and then joined the Ozera delegation in the crowd. Ekaterina made a small gesture to a large satin pillow on the floor in front of the steps.
Kneel.
There was the briefest hesitation on Lyssa's part, one I think only I noticed. Even without the bond, I was so attuned to her mood and tiniest actions that I could pick up on these things. Her eyes had gone to Jill. Lyssa's expression didn't change, and it was so strange not to know her feelings. I could make some educated guesses. Uncertainty. Confusion. Again, the pause was only a moment long. Lyssa knelt, artfully spreading her skirts around her as she did. Ekaterina had always seemed so frail and wizened in that testing room. But as she stood there with the ancient Moroi coronation book, I could sense a power still within the former queen. The book was in Romanian, but Ekaterina translated it effortlessly as she read aloud, beginning with a speech about what was expected of a monarch and then going to the vows Lyssa had to swear to.
"Will you serve? Will you protect your people? Will you be just?"
There were 12 in all, and Lyssa had to answer, "I will," 3 times to each one, in English, in Russian, and in Romanian. Not having the bond to confirm her feelings was still so strange, but I could see on her face that she meant every word she said. When that part finished, Ekaterina cued Jill forward. Since I'd last noticed the girl, someone had given her the crown to hold. It had been custom-made for Lyssa, a masterpiece of white and yellow gold intertwined with emeralds and diamonds. It complemented her outfit beautifully, and I noticed with a start, Jill did too. Another tradition was that the monarch was crowned by a family member, and this was what Jill had been saved for. I could see her hands tremble as she laid the bejeweled wonder on her sister's head, and their gazes met briefly. A flash of troubled emotion swirled in Lyssa's eyes once more, gone quickly as Jill stepped back and the weight of the ceremony took precedence. Ekaterina held out her hand to Lyssa.
"Rise," she said.
"You will never kneel to anyone again." Holding Lyssa's hand, Ekaterina turned so that they both faced the rest of us in the room. With a voice startling for her small body, Ekaterina declared,
"Queen Vasilisa Sabina Rhea Dragomir, first of her name."
Everyone in the room, except Ekaterina, dropped to their knees, heads bowed. Only a few seconds passed before Lyssa said,
"Rise."
I'd been told this was at the monarch's discretion. Some new kings and queens enjoyed making others kneel for a long time. Paperwork followed, which we all watched dutifully as well. Basically, it was Lyssa signing to say she'd been made queen while Ekaterina and a couple witnesses signed that they'd seen Lyssa made queen. 3 copies were on the ornate paper Moroi royalty so loved. One was plain white letterhead, which would go to the alchemists. When the signing was done, Lyssa took her place on the throne, and seeing her ascend those stairs was breathtaking, an image that would stay with me for the rest of my life. The room broke out into cheers and clapping as she settled into the ornate chair. Even the guardians, who normally stayed so deadly serious, joined in the applause and celebration. Lyssa smiled at everyone, hiding whatever anxiety she felt. She scanned the room, and her grin broadened when she saw Christian. She then sought me out. Her smile for him had been affectionate. Mine was a bit humorous. I smiled back, wondering what she would say to me if she could.
"What's so funny?"
asked Dimitri, looking down at me with amusement. "I'm just thinking about what Lyssa would say if we still had the bond." In a very bad breach of guardian protocol, he caught a hold of my hand and pulled me toward him.
"And?"
he asked, wrapping me in an embrace. I think she'd ask, "What have we gotten ourselves into?"
"What's the answer?"
His warmth was all around me, as was his love, and again I felt that completeness. I had that missing piece of my world back. The soul that complemented mine. My match. My equal. Not only that, I had my life back. My own life. I would protect Lyssa. I would serve. But I was finally my own person. "I don't know," I said, leaning against his chest. But I think it's going to be good.
This is Emily Schaefer. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Vampire Academy, Book 6, Last Sacrifice, by Rochelle Mead. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced by Garrett Scott. Vampire Academy, Book 6, Last Sacrifice, is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2010. All rights reserved. The book Last Sacrifice is available wherever Razorbill books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.